Welcome to Ria's Shack Radio, a weekly conversation about amateur radio and other radio-related activities, with your host, Ria Jairam, N2RJ, and heard weekly on WRMI Legends Shortwave. And now, your host, Ria.
Well, hello, my friends, and welcome to Ria's Shack Radio right here on WRMI Legends. I am Ria, my call sign is N2RJ, and we do this show weekly, well, mostly weekly, here on WRMI Legends. And we talk about amateur radio, radio-related activities, and other cool tech stuff. This week, we're going to have an interesting show, as usual. I'm going to talk about artificial intelligence and what it means for amateur radio. I'm also going to talk about the expeditions that are underway, including Bouvet Island. We're going to talk about the news, and we'll take your questions and answers. Of course, this show is on the fabulous WRMI Legends. You can support them going to WRMILegends.com, and you can figure out how to support them. They do let you subscribe. They also have where you can do a one-off. You know, anything helps. Of course, I'd like to thank Ted and Holly, who are the wonderful purveyors of this radio station, and also Jeff White and the rest of the crew at WRMI, the fabulous station right down there in Okeechobee, Florida. All right, so my friends, we'll take a break and we will be right back. Well, my friends, if you want more of what you hear here, you can head on over to YouTube and you look up Ria's Shack Radio, or you can type youtube.com/@N2RJ. That's youtube.com/@N2RJ. Where you'll find lots of YouTube content. You'll find the videos, you'll find live streams, and you'll be able to see all my YouTube friends and what we do. Sometimes I do videos, collaborations. Sometimes I just do stuff on my own because sometimes it's okay to be alone. youtube.com/@N2RJ, youtube.com/@N2RJ. And hey, give me a like, give me a subscribe, and of course, keep the content flowing. Your support is greatly appreciated. Now, back to the show. So, we have had many science fiction stories written about artificial intelligence, the relentless march of AI and singularity, and when AI becomes conscious. I don't know if AI will ever become conscious, because there are a few things which I think will stand in its way. But nonetheless, we're seeing dramatic strides in things like machine learning. We're seeing artificial intelligence. And some of the things really, really blow me away in terms of their capabilities. For example, I've been experimenting with ChatGPT. And now ChatGPT is a service where you can ask a question. You can pretty much, you know, tell it to do anything. And it'll come back and tell you, you know, different things. Like, for example, I asked it to formulate an amateur radio contest, and it actually came back with a pretty much interesting ham radio contest. Now, some of the things are not 100% accurate. They are more or less, I would say, they're kind of, you know, they, like, for example, one time when I asked about the contest rules, it told me voice modes including SSB and CW. Well, yeah, I know there's an Italian friend of mine who uses mouth to send CW on a microphone. We're not talking about that, folks. We're talking about true voice communication. So it got that wrong. There's another AI called Midjourney, but Midjourney is more into images. So Midjourney has been generating some really, really interesting images. There's a guy I met at CES. He is a senior project manager at Google Maps. Very impressed with the work that he's doing. And he kind of posted some pictures generated from Midjourney on LinkedIn. And I was like, so his name is Billy Sidhu. He is a YouTuber and TikToker and very interesting person. I saw him on LinkedIn, where he posted a picture of a keyboard with a mouse built in and all sorts of funny keys. Now, Midjourney is also posting images of people at parties, and some of them have more than the human amount of teeth. So I don't know. What really I don't know is whether a machine can become self-aware, meaning that it realizes that it's there. I don't know. I mean, of course, you know, I mean, if you're a Christian, like, you'd believe that humans have a soul, right? And that soul is from God. And you can't, you know, you can't duplicate that. Yeah. So that's my story. But, you know, even if you think of it outside of the religious context, you will see that computers are very much exact things. They're not really, they're not a random, and there is something that humans have that computers, I think, is very hard to duplicate. It might have to do with things like our internal chemistry, and, you know, because basically humans have, I don't think humans really are analog creatures. I mean, our digital creatures, we are infinitely in the analog domain, meaning that our decision making is based on analog stuff, whereas computers are digital. And with that, we have an ability to make decisions, and making decisions sometimes comes down to randomness. So how does this relate to ham radio? Well, a lot of people are kind of upset that FT8 is basically taking over the DX world. For some, you know, it's a legit concern. And I think that some of the criticism is pretty much unwarranted. Like you said, you cannot hear it with your ears. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's kind of expected. But in reality, that's neither here nor there. What I am concerned about is the level of automation, where people are making fully automatic QSOs, fully automatic conversations. They just fire it up and walk away, and then they come back to a log full of QSOs. This is not good. It's also not allowed by the ARRL's DXCC rules. So it is kind of, you know, but I could see where it'll be useful. Like, for example, Whisper. Whisper allows you to investigate propagation from your location using beacons that are automatically transmitted. Of course, under FCC rules, or under rules in most countries, wherever you are, you have to be in control of the station. You can't just walk away. But, you know, who knows how much that rule is obeyed. But what I'll tell you is that we are headed to a lot of uncertainty with the future, and quite frankly, people are going to lose jobs. I mean, some people's jobs are already being automated out. What does it bode for amateur radio? I think we'll still hang on to our regular way of making QSOs, but what I could tell you is try to get on the traditional modes like Morse code and single sideband. You know, I love Morse code. I do FT8, okay? I do a lot of FT8, but when I get on CW, I have a lot of joy. I enjoy working people on CW. I enjoy working them on single sideband. So that's that. The ARRL has a year of the volunteer, and they have a lot of points. Me being with the ARRL, of course, this is not an ARRL show, you should know, but there are points for us. And right now I'm worth 225 points if you work me. So get out there and I'll make a QSO with you. I upload my logs to the Logbook of the World, and that's how you get your points. Of course, the Logbook of the World does not have to be two people uploading to Logbook of the World. It could just be one person, but that's how the points are scored. I was at the ARRL meeting. Unfortunately, I'm not going to talk anything about that, because that pretty much is, it's behind a veil of confidentiality, and I don't think I'm able to disclose everything, other than you'll see the minutes and you'll see things in there. So you will have a view of what's in the minutes, what's past. I don't know. What does my future hold? I don't know. I am pretty much going to be there to serve the amateur community in whatever capacity I can. I love amateur radio. I love the community. You know, you guys are wonderful. All right, well, that's me. Let's take a break, and we will come back with, I guess we'll talk about the news, okay? Right here on Rhea Shack Radio. Well, my friends, I'm sure you found your favorite way to listen, but there are other ways to listen to Rhea Shack Radio. You can first listen on WRMI Legends every Friday, 5 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern, or 2300 UTC right here on WRMI Legends. You can also listen on WRMILegends.com. You can also listen wherever you get your favorite podcast. Now, I do post a podcast a little later, but you get them wherever you get your favorite podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, if you're listening in a Tesla or another car. You can listen to all of these various platforms to get the Rhea Shack Radio show. And I think you would agree, Rhea Shack Radio is the awesomest radio show on the planet. So why not spread the word? Tell your friends to tune in to Rhea Shack Radio on WRMI. And you can go to WRMILegends.com to listen live and find ways to support the show. Now, back to the show. So let's talk about the news. And the first one is about the World Radio Sport Team Championship. And this is from their website, WRTC.info. The World's Radio Sport Team Championship Sanctioning Committee is now accepting proposals for 2026 hosting. From Slovenia for immediate release, the World Radio Sport Team Championship Sanctioning Committee today announced that it is accepting proposals for hosting the 2026 WRTC event. The World Radio Sports Team Championship is an on-site amateur radio competition usually held every 4 years. Previous WRTCs have been held in Seattle, USA, San Francisco, Slovenia, Finland, Brazil, Moscow, Boston, and Germany. And of course, WRTC 2022, delayed due to worldwide public health challenges, it will be held in Italy in July 2023. Teams of two operators representing a geographical region come to the host site to compete using similar antennas and locators overseen by on-site referees. The WRTC competition has typically been held as a contest within a contest coincident with the IARU World HF Championship to capitalize on the high activity of a popular worldwide operating event. Groups interested in hosting WRTC 2026 should submit a letter of intent with a summary proposal. This should include the following items: committee organization, identifying each of the principals involved, and any relevant organization and amateur radio experience, especially in contesting and radio sport. Competition description, including planned number of teams, geographic location of operating sites, and competitor selection process. Social aspects, including approximate schedule, travel, and housing arrangements for participants. Financing, including an outline of the budget and fundraising approach. A detailed budget is not required at this time. Expected assistance and involvement from local and regional amateur organizations and regulatory authorities. Public exposure, including plans to publicize and promote the event locally and worldwide. Letters of intent must be submitted no later than March 31st, 2023 at 2359 UTC. The WRTSC will review all proposals received and will respond by April 30th, 2023. Additional information may be requested. It is the goal of the WRTCSC to announce the venue for the WRTC 2026 at the close of WRTC 2022 in Bologna in July 2023. Letters of intent should be submitted directly to the chairman of the WRTC sanctioning committee, Tina Branjic, S50 Alpha, by email to tine.branjic@gmail.com. So this is a good thing. You know, they have the competition. Really, I would say it's a gathering of people who score high in contests for whatever reason, and they get together and they compete. So they're looking for a new venue. So I hope they find one. So we have the Bouvet Island D Expedition chugging right along, and they have fair seas and winds. The team is continuing to sailing to Bouvet. This is from DX World, dx-world.net. They have the tracker. They're inching closer to the island, and they're going to have their day of arrival soon. So All eyes will soon be on a swell around Beauvais, which is 3 to 4 meters, but with the prevailing wind, the swell may subside soon. So we'll see. There is a plan as well on the Beauvais website, and they are operating on 160 meters CW only, 80 meters CWSSB. So there will be no FT8 or 160 or 80. There will be a special permit up to 1500 watts on CW and SSB. There will be a CW split up to 15 kilohertz and phone 30 kilohertz spectrum. RTTY, they will be on 14.125 and 21.125. And they will have priority over digital modes. There will be 4 FT8 stations, and they will be running there. So there'll be FT8 on 40 to 10 meters only, running 100 watts, but we'll see. Very interesting. Yeah, they're kind of, you know, shying away from FT8, blasting out FT8. So there will be some quite the pileups, I must say. I'm glad that they're doing CW. I hope they make a lot of contacts on CW. And then Adrian KOSCA, that they're now probably less than 700 miles, and they hope to be there in like 3 to 4 days. So that's good. Well, you know, this is a long time one. I already have them. I've had them since 2008. So I've had like, what, 14 or 15 years with them in the log. It's lucky, but we'll see how that goes. Good luck to them. Of course, there is the 4U100QO at the UN in Vienna, the United Nations Amateur Radio Contest DX Club ARC DXC. So that's the 4U1A station. There'll be a station consisting of RW3AH, ON5UR, ON6AJ, and ON8AZ. They will do a QO100 activation, using, for the first time, using call sign 4U100QO from United Nations International Amateur Radio Club. It'll be QRV as 4U1A. So this is interesting, because those of you who live in the footprint of the QO100 satellite have a very good opportunity to make contacts. We're a little jealous here in the Americas, because we don't have that. But there are people, there are countries like most of Europe, Africa, parts of Asia, and I believe part of Australia, and also Eastern Brazil has access to this QO100 satellite. And the satellite basically allows, it's a geostationary satellite, meaning that it's at one fixed point that rotates in lockstep with the Earth, and it will provide reliable communications all the time. So that's good. It's actually piggybacking off a TV satellite launched by Qatar. Okay, all right, so that is good news for them. Crozet Island, Paul, the F6EXV, this is again from DX World. There's been many online QSL requests, and there's been issues with missing contacts on Logbook of the World. He said they're resolved. If there are missing QSOs, you can send an email to qsl.crozet, C-R-O-Z-E-T, at orange.fr, and he will do it. So I actually got my confirmations in the Logbook of the World, so I'm good to go. That is country number 329 for me, 327 current, on the current list. Oh, I have 4 back from honor roll. When will I ever make honor roll? I'm hoping sometime soon. We will see. Then there is a 9U4WX Burundi 2023. So Vlad, OK2WX, informs that the antennas arrived in Bujumbura today. And he's also sending the final versions of the 9U5R and 9U4WX QSL cards. And there is he did put on his DX World hat, so that's good. Maybe I should have Cole on the show sometime. That would be interesting. Yeah, so he's going to be active on February 4th to 27, 2023. He's going to be on 80 to 10 meters, CW and SSB, 100 watts only. Oh, that certainly seems interesting. I wish him best of luck. HB0DX, Liechtenstein, team concerning of DL1 MGB, DL2 JRM, DL3 DXX, and DL7CX will be active from Liechtenstein during January 26th to 30th, 2023. They're participating in the CQ Worldwide CW contest as HB0DX. That's this weekend, with activities outside the contest as HB0 stroke home call, HB0DX via DL3 DXX. Okay, that's good. Maybe you'll hear me on 160 this weekend. Yeah. There's also Lesotho. Urus YL2GM will be active from Lesotho as 7P8WW from January 26th to February 4th. And they'll be on 160 to 10 meters, CW, SSB, and digital. And logs will be uploaded to Club Log. And then you could, of course, QSL via online QSL request service. And you'll get them. There's been a lot of different things. There's one from Tomotu as well, too. H40 Tomotu from October 31st to November 14, 2023. It's H40WA. So that's the Intrepid DX group. That is Paul N6PSE and his group. Really nice. Rob N7QT, Paul N6PSE, Sandro V7NY, June OE1JUN, Hey DJ9, DJ9RR, Lacey HA0NAR, and Arliss W7XU, Walt N6XG. They'll make significant effort on low bands. They'll use 1500 watts on A to 160, and they'll use CWSSB and FT8 Fox and Hound modes. So they have, they appreciate any and all sponsors, and they'll donate via PayPal. Of course, intrepiddxgroup@gmail.com. But, you know, you can go on their website and look. I mean, I'm not really in the business of getting donations for them, but if you look on their website and you want to support them, that's the way to do it. All right, let's see what else is in the news. So from the UK, if you're in the UK, there are actually a number of different contests. This is from the RSGB. The UK 6-meter group winter marathon began on Thursday, 1st December last year, and the contest will run until 31st January 2023. If you're using all modes on the 6-meter band, the exchange is signal report and locator. The CQ Worldwide 160-meter DX contest will end its 48-hour run today, Sunday, 29 January, at 2200 UTC. Using CW only, the exchange is signal report and CQ zone, so the American stations can send the state and Canadian stations send their province. British Amateur Radio Teledata Group RTTY Sprint will end its 24-hour run today, at Sunday, 29th January, and 1200 UTC. Well, I guess it's going to end on Sunday, and they're using RTTY only, exchange the serial number. And there's, let's see, 1st of February, UK and Ireland Contest Club 80 meter from 2000 to 2100, SSB only, exchange is your 6-character locator. 1st February, the 144 MHz FT8 activity contest will be run for 4 hours from 1700 to 2100 UTC. FT8 only, of course. And the exchange report and 4-character locator. There is also on the 1st of February a separate 144 MHz FT8 activity contest for 2 hours from 1900 to 2100 UTC using FT8 only. And the exchange will be report and 4-character locator. So, if your station's entering the 4-hour contest, may also enter the 2-hour contest. Okay. On the 5th of February, Sunday, 432 MHz Affiliated Societies contest runs from 0900 to 1300 UTC. Using all modes, the exchange is signal report, serial number, and locator. This is courtesy of the RSGB. So this is a cool one. You think you've heard some DX from far away? Well, get this. A radio signal that's nearly 9 billion, with a B, light years away, was captured in a radio telescope from India's Giant Meter Wave radio telescope. So this is from McGill University, this is from Yahoo News, said that this marked the first time since this type of radio signal has been detected at such a large distance. And then, of course, space.com had reported that the signal could mean scientists can start investigating some of the earliest stars and galaxies. Last July, astronomers at MIT and other universities in the US and Canada detected a persistent signal from a galaxy of unknown astrophysical origin. And in 2020, a mysterious signal from Proxima Centauri made waves. You know, some people have been asking if we're not alone. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. Probably we're not alone. I just don't know. But I don't know whether these signals actually mean that. But receiving these signals going back to such a large distance means essentially we've kind of had a proxy to time travel. So we're now able to hear things that went on long before we existed, and quite frankly when the universe started, so we can get clues as to the early origins of the universe, and that's pretty cool. Well, the one from Proxima Centauri, unfortunately, was probably human-made radio interference, and this is a growing problem. Our noise floor in the world is so incredibly high now, it's interfering with things like radio astronomy. But there's been, you know, a lot of controversy about some of these things. But at the same time, it's pretty cool that we're able to get these signals from far away. Really strange. Is it aliens? I don't know. Could be. Who knows? But it is something that radio made possible. Okay? Let's also talk about World Radio Day. So World Radio Day in 2023. World Radio Day is coming up on the 13th of February, and it is UNESCO is going to release a number of historic audio files that are going to be used free of charge. But of course, we can't transmit music on amateur radio. At the same time, there are going to be celebrations within amateur radio that where we celebrate World Radio Day. And in Europe in particular, there is going to be operators from on the Friday and the Monday, the 10th and the 13th. So there's going to be call signs, I'm guessing, in Spain. And Alpha Oscar, and then the number is 1, and then I guess they go through the numbers, and then they have WRD, World Radio Day. So yeah, so this is going to be pretty interesting. World Radio Day, celebrate it. I hope you're listening on the radio, by the way. We are on WRMI shortwave. So speaking of youth and schools and radio, students at Brentwood Magnet Elementary School of Engineering in Raleigh, they had a contact with the International Space Station. So the students at Brentwood Magnet Elementary School of Engineering in Raleigh, they had their ISS contact. And a number of these have been going on. They've been doing these through ARIS, which is an organization, Amateur Radio International Space Station. And they've been doing a lot of these, these contacts. So North Carolina, they've had how these contacts typically go is that they have the questions prepared. And then when they do the contact on the day, they call up to the space station. They use either the telebridge, which means they go through and a station on the ground already, like some ham's existing station, or they might set up antennas at the school for the day. And you know, this is kind of interesting because not only do you make the contact directly from the school, but you also teach the students about the actual setup of the station, and you have this, and it makes a good show for the press. You know, when we did one at Sussex Charter School in New Jersey, we pretty much had a lot of local press. We even had the state acting education commissioner. That was pretty good. So good luck to them. I hope some kids get inspired to do space and astronomy careers. You know, maybe they want to be astronauts themselves, or they want to do engineering or something. That's always pretty cool. And finally, you know, while this is not really news, I do want to give a shout out to Hackaday. So if you go to hackaday.com, they have a number of different articles on amateur radio. And you can go and check out. They've featured my YouTube channel a few times. They have a number of different articles on amateur radio. And you can pretty much get a good idea. Jenny List, she has been scouting the web for amateur radio related articles, and always good to check them out. So you check them out, hackaday.com. Okay, so let's take a break and come right back with the Q&A. Hey, if you do like the show, you can follow me on other social media. You can follow me on Twitter at Ria Jairam. That's at RIAJAIRAAM. You can follow me on Mastodon. I'm at N2RJ at mastodon.radio. You can also follow me on Instagram at Ria Jairam, RIAJAIRAM. I'm also on Facebook if you look for Ria Jairam. My Facebook handle is ria.h.jairam. You can follow and you can see all my posts. Everything is public. I do post things other than amateur radio sometimes, and I try to keep it funny and lively. But as always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform as well. This way, if you miss a show on the radio, you can always get it on the podcast. Now, back to the show. So now we're on to your favorite segment, Q&A. My friend Audrey asks the question, what would you do for a youth radio club? And this is an interesting one because I have direct experience. Now, she's a teacher at a school in New Jersey, and she's looking to get amateur radio into the school. The first thing I would really recommend is that you try to organize a demo day for amateur radio in the school. You don't really have to go all guns blazing with all sorts of different radio equipment. You know, you bring some simple radio equipment, maybe an ICOM 705 or some similar transceiver, or you have people set up outside and have the kids see radio. You can do a remote where you have remote stations at your house, and then you access them from a computer at the station. Bring along some good videos. I know the RSGB has some videos that will showcase amateur radio appropriately. You bring along some guest speakers. I was a guest speaker at Sussex Charter School, and then I became fully involved with their radio club. You know, they have their own radio shack there now. They have a radio, they have antennas, and all sorts of cool stuff there now. So that is one thing you can do. Of course, if you can apply for a contact with the International Space Station and get that, that is going to bring lots of attention. It's going to bring lots and lots of good press, and students will be interested. And, you know, you integrate this with a whole STEM curriculum, it's going to be pretty good. So those are some of the things you can do. If you're getting kids licensed, I would say let them try out the radio first and then get them licensed. You can use different materials, books and such like that. One thing we did mix up with radio is that I'm involved in drones and such like that. I brought in drones and showed them drones, and drones have a lot to do with radio. Drones are actually pretty much depend on radio because, you know, you need to control it while they're in the air, and you can only really do that with radio. So if you integrate that with the drone program, you show the kids, you know, they get excited. The kids were really, really excited when I showed them the drones, and they were really, really interested in radio after that. So that's something to look forward to with getting kids involved. I know some people say, well, you know, you need to get people who have money and establish in life. No, you probably do, but I think if you start people young, they will grow into the hobby, they will stay with it, and they will stay with it for life. Whereas if, you know, somebody who's just trying out a new hobby and it doesn't work out, they'll probably discard it and go and spend money on something else. That's not to say we shouldn't attract people of all different kinds, but saying we don't need to attract kids and we need to attract people who are adults is kind of self-defeating in my opinion. So I have another question about 2-meter radios. One person asked, should I get a 2-meter radio? There is an ICOM 2-meter radio that does 80 watts versus one that does 50 watts. And this is for my home station. The first advice I always give people is that your antenna should always be your first priority. So if you don't have a good antenna, forget about adding power. That said, if you've done the best antenna you can at your location, by all means, add more power. There is a coverage map I use to confirm my findings, and it's called Radio Mobile. So Radio Mobile is a coverage map generator. It's by ve2dbe.com. So you go to ve2dbe.com and you can then see here they have websites. He apparently runs another website called towercoverage.com. And I think that one is paid, but the Radio Mobile is free. And Radio Mobile allows you to do ham radio maps. You just register and you create these coverage maps. And you can see there is a significant difference between 50 and 80 watts, I must tell you. It's where some stations that were marginal are now basically going to be almost full quieting. And so you get to reach out further. This is especially useful if you're doing simplex communications. He also asked about coax, and you know, hams have this sort of worship of Times Microwave LMR 400 coax. I don't get it. I mean, it seems it's low loss, but there are a lot of low loss options out there. I personally use Andrew Heliax, which is now made by Comscope, their LDF450A, and that gives me pretty low loss on up to all my HF bands. And of course on VHF I get maybe like 1 decibel of loss on 6 meters. But yeah, of course, antenna wise don't use a J-pole. A J-pole is a good antenna, but it's not the highest gain antenna. You could probably buy something like a Diamond X200 or X300, which will give you very high gain. Of course, it sacrifices the radiation angle for that. You can also get a Yagi and a rotator and turn that, and this way you get contacts, but they're directional. You get high gain, but it's directional. So that is many ways to do it. Of course, at that point, you'll need a rotator. You could use a TV rotator for a 2-meter antenna, or you could use put it up with your HF antennas if you have HF antennas. Clearing trees is always a good idea, meaning that your antenna should be above the tree line because trees do attenuate. They do reduce radio signals, and you must try to strive to be always above the trees, because if you're shooting into the trees, the water in the leaves will take up some of that RF. So somebody asked here on one of these groups, this is Jonathan, he asked, he's in an apartment and he's just getting into HF, he wants to build a dipole. He can build a dipole due to space, a regular linear dipole, but he's wondering if he could build a random length linear dipole rather than a resonant one with a one-to-one balun and use a radio's built-in tuner. So one problem is with a random dipole, you're not sure which frequency you're getting. I mean, you could measure it and see, and then your pattern is going to be way off. So it's probably best to get a smaller antenna or a different antenna, like a vertical, where you can have it resonant. But using the built-in tuner is not really advisable, because the built-in tuner in most radios can handle only up to 3-to-1 SWR. And with that, you're not able to handle big mismatches that you would have from these random antennas. So in simple terms, basically, when you have an antenna, it must be matched in terms of 50 ohms at the feed point. So the impedance must be 50 ohms. And then the radio will expect a 50 ohm load. If it doesn't see a 50 ohm load, some of the RF is going to be reflected back into the radio, and you're going to have standing waves, and it's going to have something called a high VSWR, voltage standing wave ratio, where roughly this means that you'll have some power reflected back and it's not going to be effectively radiated out the antenna. It's going to heat up your radio. It's going to damage the finals. So what you need to do is either you have a resonant antenna which transfers all the power efficiently, or you use an antenna tuner. Many radios are coming with built-in antenna tuners, and you want to, you can use that for small mismatches. Basically, most of them don't recommend going above 3:1. But if you are doing above 3:1, then you need an external tuner. So you can get something like, I have the Flex Radio Tuner Genius, and I also I have a one from LDG. Those are good. Those are pretty good. They have a number of different tuners from different manufacturers. LDG, Palstar, Flex Radio. There's MFJ makes some of them. And MFJ makes a lot of manual tuners, which are okay, but they require a little more patience. But they're good to go. So that is what you need to do. Of course, like I said, and one thing too is if you're matching, if your tuning is closer to the antenna, like you have some coil at the antenna to shorten it, electrically lengthen it and such, you will be able to have a better, more efficient transfer of power between your radio and your antenna. But if that's not possible, then you put the tuner near the radio and hope for the best. There is also a question about aircraft. Which is the cheapest radio to monitor aircraft? And this one was posted on Facebook, and a bunch of people came up and said, well, you know, you don't need a radio. You just go on liveatc.net. And I admire the work that Dave Pasco does, but, you know, there is magic in listening on the radio and an actual radio. So I would say the cheapest way to get on is you get a scanner, probably a Bearcat scanner. You can probably get them from one of these different radio stores. I believe Main Trading Company, who is a sponsor of WRMI Legends, by the way, he carries them, and you could get a scanner, probably a Bearcat scanner or some other radio scanner. But, you know, a number of different ham radios actually have aircraft receive capability. And if you go in the specs, like for example, the Yaesu, I believe, might be the FT-65. I have to check that one. If you go the Yaesu FT-65 might be doing airband. But, is it the FT-60? Might be the FT-60. But one of these Yaesu radios, and some of these radios like the VX-5, for example. Right, so the FT-60R includes wide receive coverage. It does aircraft band and such like that. And that's a good radio. You have some ICOM radios that do it. You have a Linko. A lot of Linko radios include airband wide receive coverage. So they're really, really, you might have a radio already that can do it. And how do you determine which aircraft frequencies to listen to? Well, you can go to skyvector.com and you can actually look at the sectional charts that are there. And the sectional charts basically are basically maps that aircraft and pilots use to navigate. And if you look around various airports, like for example, I look at Sussex Airport, which is KFWN, and let me pull that up here. They'll have like a CTAF frequency. You'll see a little C next to it, 122.7, and that basically is a common traffic air frequency. So that's the frequency that all of the airplanes use to communicate, right? And let's see. There are a number of, like the big airports that you don't fly small planes to, they they have a number of different frequencies. They have approach and all sorts of things. Like JFK has CTAF on 119.1 and 123.9. And you can listen to like LaGuardia Airport 118.7. And you have a number of these like Teterboro. So Teterboro actually has a lot of private jet traffic. And they, you know, they take a lot of private jets. And their CTAF is on 119.5. So, yeah, they have like a lot of private jets. Maybe even Elon Musk might fly into there sometimes. Who knows? Linkin Park, the airport I go nearby to a lot of times, 122.8. So, yeah, if you look at skyvector.com, you'll be able to see a lot of that. And you'll be able to even see like real time, you know, like what they call the TFR, temporary flight restrictions, where they tell you basically that you can't fly any kind of aircraft, even a small plane or a drone even. But you can actually fly larger aircraft above a certain number of feet. And you can also, you know, if you're flying within TFRs, you might be able to do it if you have special conditions like a certain squawk code and such like that. So really, really interesting stuff. I really, you know, I enjoy this. Maybe I'll finish my private pilot license certificate one day. So the question is, who still uses Morse code? Well, obviously ham radio operators do. You know, Morse code is one of those things. And I try to equate it with a manual transmission. Of course, the explainers, whatever you want to call them, had to come and say, no, it's not like the Lord's transmission. All right, guys, I'm not bashing manual transmission, but I do drive an electric vehicle, so I don't have a transmission. This has a single gear. But anyway, that aside, the point is that sometimes you want to use something that harkens back to an earlier day because it's simpler, because it's less, it has certain advantages that simply haven't been overcome by progress. Morse code is one of those things. Morse code, let me count the ways. One of them is that Morse code is simple, meaning that you don't have to have any computer to generate digital modulation or decoding. You can simply turn this carrier signal on and off. You don't have to have a microphone. You don't even have to modulate or anything. You just turn it on and off. You generate a signal and you turn it on and off. And the early days, they were using SparkGap. They didn't have any fancy oscillators or any of that stuff. No. Well, eventually they got tubes and then later solid state. So that kind of evolved on itself. Signal to noise ratio. So generally, the presence of a signal in order to be used for communication, generally, it must be signal in proportion to noise. And every signal, quite frankly, is in proportion to noise. Because if it's buried by the noise, if it's below the noise, you're not going to be able to use that signal. So, Morse code, due to its narrower bandwidth, allows you to make more efficient use of it. And therefore, it can have a better signal to noise ratio for the same average power. And therefore, you can communicate further distances with it. Now, let's say something like voice. Voice uses like probably 2.4 kilohertz or 2.8 kilohertz. That 100 watts is spread out over that 2.4 kilohertz. But if you use 100 watts on CW, it's concentrated in that narrow, pretty much in that 500 hertz bandwidth. So you see, there's quite a difference. There's a concentration of power. Oh my gosh, that sounds kind of political. But there's a concentration of power, and that pretty much helps you decode much at further distance and make more efficient use of your power. The other thing is that Morse code also, it transcends language barriers for a lot of people. So you might speak English, or a foreign ham might speak English. So if you're from another country, you speak English. And we understand most people who speak English, but some people, their English is not equivalent to a native speaker. And a lot of people have problems understanding. But with Morse code, there is really nothing to understand, you know, as long as you receive the letters. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun decoding Morse code. A lot of people love Morse code, and it's an art form for them. At the same time, you know, it's not where you're... I'm glad it's not a license requirement anymore, because it held back a lot of people from ham radio. And a lot of people, frankly, got to hate ham radio because of Morse code. I don't like that. I want people to love ham radio. And to do that, they need to not be forced to learn a dead language. It's not a dead language, okay? It's a joke. But they don't need to be forced to learn something that's not in use regularly. You know, Latin is one of the things that is still in use. I mean, it's not in use in everyday language, everyday speaking, but it's used in science. And it's used in a lot of referring to things. And I guess it's used in some other contexts, like laws and such like that, to describe context. So it is there. And of course, it's used by the Catholic Church. But it is used, and I think Morse code is used. And Morse code is actually used for some things, like, let's say, you know, you ever take out a key from a Honda and leave the door open, you'll hear four beeps. Well, that four beeps is an H for Honda. You hear, you hear some things go like, you'll hear K in some devices. They send out Morse code to give you signals that is ready, audible signals. The MTA in New York City that runs the subways, their repeaters identify with Morse code, and a lot of things will identify with Morse code. Morse code is sometimes used as a plot in movies, and it's used to basically, you know, it's used to satisfy the requirement to send a signal without being too obtrusive. You could send Morse code very easily, and to normally to identify your station, and it's still used. So Morse code is still very useful. Of course, learning it for ham radio is not required, but I love Morse code, and I hope you make a Morse code contact with me. So this person asks, he's annoyed that almost everything is web-based these days. expecting so much from over the air. Well, you know, the web is certainly taken over a lot of things. I mean, when I was doing programming it for a big insurance company, this was for a small insurance company, we did our applications on a text terminal, and then later on that we were talking about the next evolution. The next evolution was to have a new web browser, and I was pretty intrigued by that. And my boss at the time, the IT manager, he was basically saying, yeah, you know, it's web-based applications of the future. Little did I know how right he was and to how much of an extent he was. And every application these days is becoming web-based. That's so amazing. In ham radio, I mean, you can still play it your way. You don't have to get into web, web anything. You can buy your radio, you can just operate it, you know, do it how you want, right? And then the last one is, this person says he's struggling with FT8, the transmit pattern is interfering with electrical items around the house, and he trips the UPS powering his Wi-Fi. So what he could do is, he could probably try putting ferrites on those cables, ferrite beads, reduce the transmitter power, and move the antenna away from the house, okay? So move the antenna away from the house, and that will help with interference, hopefully. So that's how you do it with a lot of things. And sometimes the interference goes both ways, by the way. So you have to prevent ingress and egress, not outgress. Ingress and egress. Cable TV systems have essentially done the same thing. They don't use ferrites. They basically just use heavily shielded cable. And some of them even use ham, the 2-meter ham band and 70-centimeter ham band as T TV channels. To the point where if you have an old cable-ready TV, you can use that to receive over-the-air amateur TV if it's still in your area. So, yeah. Well, you know, I was at the AWRL meeting last week, and there's a lot I can't say. There's a lot I will say. You know, I love the AWRL. I love a lot of things it does. At the same time, I think that there's a lot of room for improvement, and I really hope that they do improve. Unfortunately, you know, you have to engage with your AWRL officials, directors. If you see something you like, tell them about it. If you see something you don't like, definitely tell them about it. I used to get a lot of things both ways, you know, and I'm saying this myself. You know, there's a lot of things in the amateur radio world and a lot of things I could help with and do. And I think definitely I want to help amateur radio move forward. And I will always be in the amateur radio sphere, you know, and I will always be a helpful ham, as I've always been, you know, as I've always been. I'm really thankful for those who supported me and who support me and continue to, you know, engage with me and do things. I'm really thankful to have this amateur radio community with me. And I couldn't do it without you. Always, you know, and it's always about you. It's always about the friends we make. You know, amateur radio is a hobby of friends. And it's a hobby with a greater purpose sometimes. And that purpose isn't always saving the world, by the way. You know, emergency communications only goes so far. I think amateur radio's biggest benefit is that it's a means to communicate without the middleman. And, you know, it's a means to learn about radio technology free of encumbrances from the internet. And this is becoming even more so. I think amateur radio is always special. I think it's always, you know, it's always going to be something special. And this is why we need to fight to preserve and enhance it, and why we need to keep pushing to keep amateur radio advancing. Why am I saying this? Well, you know, there's a lot of things going on, so I wouldn't get into detail yet, but you can probably guess. And at the same time, you know, I'll always be doing the show, hopefully as long as I get on the air. And I do have it on the podcast, so if ever in the event, you know, we're unable to air the show anymore, I could still have it on the podcast. I'm not sure if I'm going to go to Hamcation. I might go to Hamcation in Orlando if I could get a good flight down there. It's just I've been traveling so much for work and other things. You know, it's just been, oh, do I want to hop on another plane when I have to go and hop on another plane again in a few weeks? Yeah, it could get tiring. I might be traveling overseas this later this year, probably. Probably going to different parts of the world, which I haven't been before, which I'm excited about. You know, I have never really spent much time in Europe, but I did spend time in Asia. Hoping one day to go to my motherland in India and see how things are. I know a lot of Indian hams, they said I'm welcome anytime, and I'm always happy to go there. So anyway, all right, well, that's enough about me. This has been yet another Rhea Shack Radio right here on WRMI Legends. And you can support the show by going to WRMILegends.com. And of course, there are several ways to support it there. Would like to thank Ted and Holly for the fine use of this radio station on the WRMI Legends slot. And as always, my friend, peace in 73. And I hope to see you next time. Until then, have fun.